Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Calcio Land podcast. So we did an episode earlier this week for our patrons, recapping the January transfer window with our friend Enrico Passarella. We will talk about high level, the main storylines today as well. We are also going to have game picks with our dear friend Thousand Names, who's on deck. And said, yeah, of course there are games this weekend. It feels like there are games every day these days. We have some patron questions to get to, and at the end we have a superb interview available to all with our dear friend Giulio Di Cienzo from the excellent Vox to Box podcast in Italy, making his second appearance on the show. That was a ton of fun, as was the first time. So I think you'll enjoy that at the end. But I'm very excited to be reunited with our producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. I know Alex has a bounce in his step because things at Chelsea are looking on the up and up. But I do have a question for Alex, who longtime listeners of the show know has kind of been a little bit ambivalent. He has told us about his admiration and sometimes love for some Milan players. So this is what I want to know today, Alex. Tomori off to a good start at Milan. He is making the impact we expected. They are at the top of the standings. So I want to ask you this, Alex. Do you feel more of a Milan fan now that Tomori is there? But more importantly, are you kind of hoping they maybe don't win the Scudetto? That way there's a higher chance he returns to Chelsea? Because look, if Milan wins and he continues to make an impact, it feels like a slam dunk they redeem him. So how do you feel about this conundrum, Alex?
Conundrum's a good word, because I totally agree that it's very unlikely that I'll get a win-win. Very unlikely. A win-win for Alex Goldberg would be Tomori is fantastic, absolutely fantastic. Everybody sees what a good player the Chelsea Academy produced, and somehow he returns home to Chelsea. That's the win-win for me, and that's very unrealistic, because I agree. If he does help them win the Scudetto, he's as good as gone for us Chelsea fans. And you know what? That still is the realistic scenario I'm okay with. Above all, I want Fikayo Tomori, a good kid from Chelsea's academy. I want him to play, and I want him to play well, and I want even more in the world to take notice of the talent he is. So I am happy for him as a person. I know his father, great guy. I'd be happy for his whole family if he succeeds with Milan right now. And hey, at the very least, selfishly, it's another feather in the cap for the Chelsea Academy. It really would be that they produced a player now who's having a good career at one of the most historic clubs of all time, AC Milan. So I'm plenty shameless, let's say, to tout that. I will always skew things the way I want to skew things. So if we lost Tomori, it would be sad, but I would probably be loud on Twitter and I would say, ah, look at the Chelsea Academy. There's another win for them. So, no, the realistic scenario of Tomori doing really well at Milan, them winning the Scudetto, but also Tomori staying there, I'm okay with that. I am okay with that. And some, not to bore the Calcio Land listeners, but some of the reason why I'm okay with that is the center back position is one position where in the pipeline, in terms of prospects, Chelsea have a lot of players that not just could be a part of their future, should be a part of their future. And I even know firsthand that in deciding if Chelsea should include an option to buy on Tomori, they did consider other youngsters they have at the club in the center back spot that could be featuring soon. So that did help them bite the bullet, so to speak, on putting the option to buy in there for Tomori. I don't think they would have done that if they had a really, really weak group of center backs behind them age-wise. So that did impact it. Now, to get to the meat and potatoes of your question, David, where am I now with my Serie A support? Yeah, I'm definitely on the AC Milan side of things. No offense to my guy Lorenzo Insigne at Napoli. I obviously admitted a couple weeks ago that I thought he was close to done and dusted, and he has revived his career way better than I thought he would, and I still like him. And I love the fact that he just seems so apart in Naples, Lorenzo Insigne, so credit to him.
Yeah.
But everybody knows my relationship with Bakayoko is a little bit off and on, so I don't think he's enough to pull me over there. I'm very happy that Irving Chucky Lozano made me look kind of good and is definitely better in year two than year one, but nah, it's not enough. I definitely like Tomori the most player-wise in Serie A, and I don't know, my once-a-month co-host in Asmir Begovic was on Milan for half a season last campaign, and he really thinks highly of Milan, and I've always liked Zlatan. And speaking of Zlatan, I said on one of the very first episodes we ever did that, yeah, Pogba was probably my favorite player at the time when he was playing for Juve, but when I started getting into the sport and I was playing FIFA, it was all Thiago Silva and Zlatan. I was playing with AC Milan all the time. So it's not too foreign for me to root for AC Milan. So the only predicament I'm in is my pride is now really chipping away because I have said, even up till this point, that Juve would still somehow win the Scudetto. So my heart versus my pride, I definitely now am going to go on to just the side of my heart. I think I'm fully on the AC Milan side of things. But David, I want to further this to you. How much do you think the arrival of Fikayo Tomori and also just the rest of Milan's moves have impacted the Scudetto race?
Yeah, well, first off, I keep thinking of something Napoli outsider said on the pod about 2 months ago. Maybe it was more. I asked him, you know, who's the best American ownership group and said, yeah, and he did not hesitate for a second and said the Elliott Fund at Milan, which in the short term kind of took a step back. But then thinking it through, it makes a ton of sense. And I think with this January window, the Elliott Fund has absolutely solidified themselves as not just best American ownership group in Italy, but one of the best period over there. I feel like it's kind of like McKinney. They've gone past that American adjective. They're just doing a great job there. And why do I say that? They clearly backed the team in the January window. Now, Inter and Juve didn't make any moves in coming. So you can definitely say that the gap was bridged just in and of itself. Now, the flip side is you could say, well, look, Juve and Inter had way more depth than Milan going into the window. And all Milan did was bridge the gap and not really widen their lead. But that's fine. I think if you look at Milan's starting lineup, especially with the way they were playing this season, there really were no weak spots. Like even Calabria has become like a really, really solid player. Chiar was performance-wise one of the best center backs in Serie A, but he has been injured a few times. And Romagnoli, I think this season maybe not as good as last. So Tomori makes a ton of sense, and it makes a ton of sense to have Tomori at his age, because as good as Chiar is, he's not someone you can build 2-3 years from now. And if Tomori and Romagnoli can develop a great partnership, not only do you improve your chances this season, you have a building block for the future. And look, you know, was that option to buy, was it 30 million? Somewhat steep? Yeah, but at the same time, Tomori is so young that that totally fits a player that's going to maintain and probably increase his value. Aside from that, I thought the other moves were good too. We've talked about Mete. I think he's a fine backup to Franchessi, which Franchessi is kind of almost a unique player in Serie A, and they bring someone who is somewhat similar. And look, 2 years ago, we were talking about Mete as a breakout player, and Torino have been really, really bad since. And I always like the idea of picking players that have shown you something on teams that have been bad for a while, because the thinking is, oh, you come to a better situation, you'll be a lot better. And look, we don't know how much Mandzukic has left as a player, but what I will say that makes sense for his signing is he's a very similar player to Ibrahimovic. And I don't mean that ability-wise, impact-wise, but body, style of play, and whatnot. What I like about the Mandzukic move is if Ibra's out, at least you have a player where you don't have to change your system, because Milan has kind of had to do that, figure out a different center forward there. So look, I think if you went into this window thinking Milan's starting 11 was as good as any team in Serie A, and they certainly were playing like it, the goal was to improve depth, and absolutely mission accomplished there. For your Scudetto pick, I think you are still right that Juve is definitely in the mix. They've been playing better. And look, Juve had a brutal schedule with a ton of games in between, and a lot of people thought this was going to be make or break for them. And let's be honest, they emerged from this, I would say, in pretty decent position. So I think the way Milan did their transfer window is going to make sure we have a great Scudetto run, because now Milan has a decent amount of depth, somewhat comparable to Inter and Juve, which is going to be so key in the stretch run. So without a doubt, Milan are a clear winner of the January window.
Yeah, it really feels like when Zlatan came to Milan, something in the water really changed. And I'll give you and I credit. I don't think you and I were alone in saying this, but we did say, you know what? All that needs to happen is his presence to bring a different type of seriousness. It can be infectious. And I think it really has been. I really think it has been. So let's move on, David, now to not a transfer window special here because it's over, but a bit of a transfer window review. So let's take out Milan. We just spoke on Milan. Which teams, in your opinion, had the best transfer window other than, of course, AC Milan?
Yeah, no, I thought it was, look, we knew it wasn't going to be the sexiest window. We didn't see a ton of moves that really are going to impact the Scudetto race aside from Milan or even really the Champions League race. But we saw a lot of the teams in the relegation race and kind of in the middle of the pack make more moves. We had teams that were very active, like Cagliari, who even signed Asamoah now, and they had brought in Duncan, Nainggolan. And they might even sign Schürrle, who was a Genoa and Ajax before. So they were very active. I can't say, I would say it's the best window. I just don't know what Asamoah has left. And I am puzzled by how much Cagliari is backing Di Francesco, but he really has no more excuses. They basically did a summer transfer window in January for him. I thought Parma was an intriguing window because they signed excellent prospects for the future up front. But the question is, hopefully Parma can avoid relegation and it's just not a matter of having a very exciting Serie B team next. But they also bring in some veterans, Conti, who already worked with their manager, D'Aversa. And I think Parma is a great place for him to get his career back on track. And Graziano Pelé, who returns to Italy after 8 years. But I will tell you, three teams that stood out to me were Torino, because I like that they bring in Mandragora, who knows their new manager, Davide Nicola, really, really well. They work together at Crotone and Udinese. So I think Mandragora is a huge game changer, but I think he definitely helps that midfield. And striker Sanabria, not really that prolific, but he should work better with Belotti than Zaza has, because this season Zaza has been really not a positive for Torino. So I'm intrigued by them, but I really liked what Verona did, and they really didn't have to do anything, but they consolidated what they have. They bring in Sturaro and Lasagna. Two veterans. Sturaro already worked with Juric, and Lasagna has not had a great season, but he is a pretty intriguing player. Verona just keep trying to find that striker to go with Zaccagni, who they are going to lose this season. So I like those moves, but I really liked Bologna because they had a very bad defense. They just could never hold on to a clean sheet. So they signed Saumaro, who I liked at Genoa last season, and Antov. So I'm going to say, if I had to pick other than Milan winners, I'm going to go with Torino, Verona, Bologna, because to me, they are clearly improved from before the window.
Okay, David, how about this? Which moves intrigued you the most?
Yeah, so I purposely used intrigued because you guys know, you've known me, that I try not to talk about players that I'm not that familiar with. So I don't know how good they are, but these three signings really, really intrigue me. The first one is Antov, who I mentioned a second ago at Bologna. This is a guy who was a captain at CSKA Sofia in the Bulgarian league at a very young age. Very highly rated. I'm very curious to see what he does. I've never seen him play, but just by everything that I've read, sounds really, really intriguing, and Bologna really needs that on defense. The other one is Udinese signing Braff, who arrives on loan from Man City. What stood out to me is Udinese's manager, Gotti, the day before they signed him in a press conference after Udinese game was like, really drooling on how good Braff was on the videos that he's seen. So curious to see how that fits. Obviously, we know Udinese's owners also own a team in England, so they're developing relationships with Man City. I'm very intrigued to see what he does at Udinese. And the final one is Mele, the wing back at Atalanta. Look, Atalanta have tried many times to get an alternative to Hodebor and Gerson's, who are so important to that team. And look, they usually are very good on the transfer market, but they've struck out at the wing back position so many times. There's a long list of players. Mele, I have to say, is an absolute badass in FIFA for what that is worth. And I've been pretty intrigued by what I've seen from him so far. So I'm going to say the ones that intrigue me that I'm really keeping an eye on, Braf, Antov, and Mele on Atalanta.
Okay, noted. All right, last little item here in the transfer window review. Can you explain, David, why Juve would pay significantly for a player they could have signed on a Bosman?
Yeah, so look, we know Juve are at the forefront of the plusvalenza frontier, finding new ways to do these. So, you know, they gave us the Pjanic Artur swap, then they do swap of prospects, and I think they've done it with Barcelona, I think they've done it with PSG, they've done it with Man City. They do a swap of prospects with Marseille this summer, where each team recorded a big profit on a player that Juve stashed on their under 23 team. Marseille gets one of their youth players, so everyone's happy. Again, the key here on these deals is when you sell a player, you're basically recording all that plusvalenza in right away. So sell a player for 10 million, you're recording 10 million right away. If you buy a player, you are, say you pay him 10 million, you swap a player, 10 million out, 10 million in, that player going out, 10 million in your coffers right away. The player that you bought, instead, you are amortizing over 4 years. So he's costing you $2.5 million over the life of the contract. So think of it this way. You sell a player, your net for that year, $7.5 million, because you keep 10 that you brought in for the player you sold, and you're spreading out the guy you bought. So that's the logic behind that. And Juve took that a step further with Rovella, who, look, he's a good player. Enrico Passarella has praised him. I've liked him, what I've seen at Genoa. There are some, especially at his age, he could develop. But look, Juve could have signed him on a Bosman now. He was available. His contract expires. And it's not like they're like, oh, let's pay some money so we can bring him to the team now right away. No, they kept him on loan at Genoa. So there was no advantage whatsoever to signing him now, in theory, sporting-wise. But what made the difference is Juve sent two players of their own to Genoa, Portanova and another one that I forget his name. But that's just a financial transaction. So Juve recorded the 20 million profit on those two players that they recorded right away. And the Rovella signing, they are spreading over the life of the contract. So look at it this way. Short-term gain there year by year. This is within the rules as they are now, but it's certainly very, very creative. So Juve, once again, a new frontier in the plusvalenza. So now let's get to our friend Thousand Names, who is ready to make some game bets. Oh, he's not picking the Juve game today. I think this is a first since we've been on here. I think he's picked Juve to lose or draw every time. And this week he's going to give Juve fans a break. Actually, I take that back, that he does have them on there. All right, first up, we'll start with today's game. It's going to be later today. Fiorentina Inter, and Thousand has Inter winning 2-0. With a brace by Hakimi, and he said that Conte is going to make up for the robbery that happened in the Coppa Italia, and he's going to humiliate Rocco Commisso. And he says that's going to happen despite the fact that Vidal and Lautaro Martinez are ridiculously bad in this game. In Italian, Fiorentina Inter 0-2, Hakimi, Conte si vendica del furto subito in Coppa Italia, umiliando Rocco Commisso, nonostante Vidal e Lautaro Martinez ridicoli. So Ribery is out. Fiorentina has actually been a little frisky recently, but they also went out Milenkovic and Castrovilli, who are suspended, I believe. I'm going to go Inter 1-0 goal by Lautaro. So I'm going to go against Thousand there. Then we have probably the best game of the week, Juve hosting Roma. Not shocking that Thousand has Roma winning 2-0, goal by Cristante and Villar. Fonseca, in English, he says Fonseca is going to demolish Pirlo thanks to his fantastic midfield. And he says Bonucci is incapable of stopping Mayoral. And that, that Alexandro is done as a player. In Italian, Juve Roma 0-2, Cristante Villar, Fonseca batte Pirlo col centrocampo da favola. Bonucci non ferma mai Mayoral, Alexandro Bollito. So look, Roma's been playing pretty well. You guys know I think it's absolutely insane that Fonseca's on the hot seat, but Juve has also been playing well. I thought especially that first half against Inter, we really saw some of the best games under Pirlo. I'm going to go Juve, and I'm going to give a goal to birthday boy Ronaldo, turns 36 today. Man, it looks like that guy's going to be, it's going to be like Tom Brady. He'll be playing in his 40s. So I'm going to go Juve 1-0, goal by Ronaldo. Last game, Atalanta hosting Torino. Thousand Names has it 3-3. And he has two hat tricks, one for Zapata, one for Belotti. He says Muriel is going to miss a penalty. And he says Gasperini is going to be stopped by the maestro Nicola. And he says Atalanta's ran out of gas. And he says Napoli on Wednesday are going to give him the KO punch. And he says Torino is and will remain Granata. Quite the comment from Thousand Names in Italian. Atalanta, Torino, 3-3. Zapata, Belotti, triplette. Muriel sbaglia rigore. Gasperini incartato anche dal maestro Nicola. Finita la benzina della Dea. Mercoledì il colpo del KO del Napoli. Torino è stata e resterà Granata. Man, Thousand was inspired for that one. Look, I'm so disappointed that Atalanta lost to Lazio last weekend. I keep thinking, oh, maybe my Scudetto prediction for Atalanta that they'll be in the mix is going to make me look like a genius, and they fall short, and I just praise Torino, but I'm going Atalanta 3-1. I'm going to give Muriel, Ilicic, and Gosens a goal, and I'll give Belotti a goal on Torino. So thank you so much, Thousand Names. Great stuff as usual. So before we get to Giulio Di Cienzo, really, really fun interview to get you into the weekend mood, which I think you'll really enjoy. Let's get to our patrons. If you enjoy Calcioland, consider becoming a patron. We do one episode a week just on Patreon. We always have the longer versions of our shows for Patreon, excellent articles. Next week, we'll have Napoli Outsider on for his exclusive once-a-month chat with me. We're going to have a really fun draft. Him and I are going to draft our ideal teams for the first half of the season, and then we'll have our patrons vote on it. So it should be a lot of fun. So if you enjoy the pod, consider becoming a patron. You'll also be supporting an awesome charity. We always make a monthly donation to the Insuperabili, a great nonprofit in Italy that runs football camps for kids with disabilities. I'm very excited to welcome our next guest. The first time Giulio Di Cienzo was on our show in January was awesome. I got great feedback. We had a lot of laughs. We learned a lot. Giulio is one of the hosts of the outstanding Vox to Box podcast in Italy, my favorite calcio podcast. And the last time we had a blast talking calcio. So Giulio, always a pleasure to have you on. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Thank you so much. You're so kind.
Okay, Giulio. Well, let's start. Today we're going to talk about a lot of subjects, but you know, the January window just ended, so I kind of want to get your thoughts on this. So in your opinion, which team, or you can mention multiple, had the best window in January?
Okay, it's always difficult to judge the January transfer window because often there is a variance between the expectation and the practical results of the new signings, you know. For obvious reason, I can put Inter between the best but neither in the worst because no one came and no one get out of the team. For in my opinion, Milan have some smart moves because try to fill his needs, and that's always a good behavior because it's what you need to do on the January transfer market. But for the my personal ideas, I'm fascinated with the moves of Cagliari and Parma that have some mysterious transfer windows.
Absolutely, absolutely. So if you could pick one transfer that was your favorite move, either because of the negotiation, the fit on the team, really anything at all, what was your favorite move this January?
I apologize in advance because I have to take all of Cagliari's transfer because they made an hell of a market. But
I know, it was like a summer window for them.
If we get back in 2015, they are a candidate for the first place in Serie A, but we are in 2021, so it's a little bit strange what they do for their team, and it's hard to understand what Cagliari could become in the second half of the season. Speaking about a single name, a part of that, I'm curious to see if Adolfo Gaik in Benevento will be something similar to what Diabaté was years ago.
Yeah, I loved your tweet that imagine if Verona had made that signing. Yeah, it would have been a revolution. It would have been like January 6th in Italy at the Capitol here in D.C. had Verona done that signing.
That's right, that's right.
So let me ask you about Milan, because look, Inter and Juve stay put, incoming move. Juve made some financial moves, which we knew they would. Inter doesn't do any moves. They keep Eriksen, which, you know, could, as Galliani would say, he could be like a new addition. But Milan did add some players. And look, they had a strong starting 11. They add depth in every part of the pitch. How do you feel about these moves? Do you think this is a big help? Does it change your mind a lot in the Scudetto race? Do you think it's a small factor? What did you make of Milan's moves?
It's a mix between everything that you told. Because the only judge about their signings will be the pitch. Because Milan's moves are smart. They take some players like Meite and Tomori that are useful. But the most important addition for me is Mandzukic. Because he is the name that could change something in the Scudetto race, because he is the greatest player and is a player of experience that knows Serie A and that could have a great impact. But the great question mark is about his physical condition, because no one knows exactly how Mandzukic stays. So we will see what will happen in the first weeks. But maybe we need some to wait for this addiction to work really. Ecco.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get to your favorite subject, Handanovic, which I know you've been tweeting a lot about. And, you know, Giulio, last time he was on, we were talking about relegation race, but he does have a passion for Inter. And look, you know, I think Handanovic was a great keeper. I think last decade, probably over the whole decade, the best in Serie A when you look at the whole thing, but recently not so great. So let me ask you, obviously, Milan have Donnarumma, sensational. I think Szczesny is a great keeper. I think people outside of Italy, maybe those who just remember Arsenal, don't realize how good Szczesny is, but I think he's superb. So when you look at Inter, Handanovic, like, how much of a liability do you see having Handanovic versus Donnarumma and Szczesny?
You know that is a soft spot for me. So, of course, for me, the answer is clearly yes. He's a liability. But the problem is that Handanovic is not a liability, only referred to Szczesny and Donnarumma, that probably are the two best goalkeepers in Serie A, but also related to many other goalkeepers. In this season, it's pretty clear that Inter's captain is a problem more than a solution. There are some numbers, some statistical data that make easy to understand how much he is a problem. For example, he slightly gets a goal for every 3 shots on target. It's a problem for the team because his defense know that. And it's not easy to play when you know that your goalkeeper doesn't help in your work.
Yeah. Yeah, well said, for sure. So let's get to your other favorite subject, but this is probably more positive, and this is Genoa. Yeah. And you know how, like, right now in the U.S., it's a Black History Month, February. I feel like in Italy, January is Genoa month. But they dominate the window. They've been great with Ballardini. I think even better than I thought they would be. But let me ask you this. They didn't do that many moves in January for their standards, but Strootman was a big signing, and I actually was surprised. I think he's been playing pretty well. So what do you make of Strootman so far?
Well, I'm surprised that Strootman is playing, first of all, because I nearly forgot about Strootman in the last years. He also had some physical problems and so on. Then, yes, I'm surprised that now he's how he's playing in Genoa for Ballardini, because everything come out of the blue in typical Genoa style, for because it's in January, everything can happen. He's a starter from the day one, and Strootman provides a huge upgrade in quality and also in tactical ability to the game. He is not Lerager, to sum up, because he takes the place of Lerager or Sturaro, that are different players from him, and he adds a great quality and also experience that is important for a team that needs players that know how to do and how to play in certain moments.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about another player on Genoa, and this is Destro, which, you know, it kind of started as a joke that, should be on the Euro team and whatnot, and everyone had fun with that. But I got to tell you that maybe it's not that much of a joke anymore now. And I love Belotti. I think he's great. I think Immobile at Lazio is superb. But let's be honest, on the Azzurri, they have not been great. So let me ask you this. If Italy's playing at the Euro, who do you have more faith in, Immobile or Destro playing for the Azzurri?
You that hear Vox to Box, you know that by contract, I'm forced to answer Destro. jokes apart, the problem with Immobile is that we all know that with Italy's shirt, he's not the same player that we see every week in Lazio. There is a huge difference in his goal scoring ability, in his impact on the game, and that's a fact. Like Ewan McGregor singing Moulin Rouge some years ago. On the other side, we don't know about Destro because, as you said, that escalated quickly. We started all with a joke, and then he started scoring goals. The potential is always more exciting, and so now, Destro can be like we said in Italy, the cacio sui maccheroni, you know, because Belotti also for me. Is an important part of the Italian team, also because he's having a great season. He's doing everything that's possible in Torino. So Destro could be a great add-up, but just because Immobile with the national football team is not the same player that is in Serie A.
For sure. So I want to talk to you a little bit about Roma and Napoli, who I think are very interesting teams this season. And look, you know, you live in Italy, you know how crazy they are in Roma with the radio stations, the local media. Like, I don't know. I feel like on any other team, people would be praising Fonseca instead of having him on the hot seat. So what do you make of that situation? Let's just talk about Fonseca first. Are you surprised that there's so much drama around Fonseca? Because I think that Roma is exceeding expectations, if you ask me.
It's the same for me. I'm very surprised because Fonseca's job in Roma is undeniable from the last year, but also in this. Cioè, Roma is in the position that you expect Roma to be. So they are doing what they need to do. His real problem in the last week is the Dzeko situation. But apart that, he shows the ability to manage Roma locker room and also the roster of the team, picking some players, getting the new addiction to the starters. And his job is a good one. And I totally agree with you with that.
Yeah, let's talk a Gattuso on the other hand, because look, to me, Napoli have the third best team player-wise. Like, look, are Inter and Juve better? Yeah, no doubt about it. But I think Napoli are right there. It's also the style of play of Napoli. Really not great with those types of players. I genuinely think that Gattuso, because he was such a great player, and the Grinta, and we love his press conferences. How can you not admire and appreciate Gattuso as a man? But I think Napoli are kind of really a little bit underachieving. And also when I hear Gattuso complaining that De Laurentiis is considering other coaches, it's like, well, you know, you also replaced Montella at Milan and Ancelotti at Napoli. in season. So that's how it works. So what do you make of Gattuso at Napoli?
I agree with you with the fact that Napoli is a little bit underachieving, but sometimes it seems that Gattuso lost a little bit his team, also with some tactical decisions that are a little bit too obscure. We're talking about a little bit of underachieving and some problems, but Napoli is, I don't think that there are some real reasons to sack Gattuso. And so they need to understand is how big is his problem with De Laurentiis, because how you rightly said, the problem is De Laurentiis, because if the problem is serious, it will be the first that that will get fired. It's not so easy to understand the situation and also to find a replacement after that.
Yeah, let's talk about, at this point, I think there's a good chance both Roma and Napoli are going to have new managers. There's been talk about Allegri potentially at Roma, maybe a return from one of the former Napoli managers there with maybe Benitez as a sporting director. What would you like to see? I personally would say that I would love to see Allegri at Napoli just because I think they have a team that he could get a lot out of. I also would kind of love to see Sarri at Roma, but that's my take. What would you like to see?
I don't believe in Allegri because of his ambitions and wages. And so it's difficult to believe for me that he could agree Roma or Napoli in that moment. For Rome, another option is the return of Spalletti, but Spalletti maybe is mad, but not that mad, and so he will not get in a so difficult situation. It's not easy to find the right profile because of the situation of the two teams and the compromises that a coach must get to for his wages, like Sarri, for example. In Rome, there is an obvious and latent name that will make the ambient dream and so on. This is Daniele De Rossi. And in that case, my personal dream is about a dramatic return also of Totti in some role, like a presidential role or so on, but something that you will see in movies, cioè like him entering in Trigoria, like Ben-Hur, something like that. But it's not so easy to find the alternative, especially in when the season is still going on. It's not easy to find the right also because for Rome, there is the financial situation of the team that is not so easy.
Yeah, for sure. So let's close on this, kind of a bonus question. I love watching Barella. I have a feeling you do too.
Yes.
And to me, especially with Zaniolo hurt, I right now think there's no Italian player performing better than Barella. People can say Donnarumma, but to me, I always look at keepers differently. Do you agree? And if you think Barella's the top, who would be your second pick for the best Italian player right now?
I totally agree. And the fact is not that it's not so easy to find the second one, because Barella and Donnarumma are far, far away from all the others. And Barella is, the important thing is in Barella's style of playing, it is continuously developing. He's growing game by game in personality, in his ability to impact the game, in his ability to play with his teammates, and is always useful. So it's a great player, but still growing, and he could get to the European tournament in great condition. Find another one of the starters is not so easy, because there is no one that is clearly better than the others. So I don't know how to answer you. I think because maybe some defenders, but there is no, because Bastoni, for example, is not a regular of the national team, and there are other players in front of him. So
I think Bastoni is the best Italian defender though right now. I know that last game against Juve, that was more on Handanovic than him, but I think he's superb. Yeah, but I'm with you. I think the gap between Barella, and again, you want to count Donnarumma, that's fine. There's just a big gap. And to me, he's kind of becoming the player Vidal was at Juve, who was just unbelievable, like just so complete. Kind of like you, Giulio, always complete, good laughs, great knowledge. I always tell people, if you want to learn Italian or if you already speak Italian and you want more content, Vox to Box is the place to be. Are you guys going to be okay without Geno a month? You guys have things to talk about when Geno is not in the window? You're going to be okay?
See, yes. We will find something different to talk about, we promise.
I'm sure you will.
So
well,
much,
Giulio,
babe.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
Look
so much.
Look forward to doing this again very soon.